Live on the Talk of the Quad Cities, KQ&A, it's time for Q&A with DJ Phone. Today's program is sponsored by Yavapai Regional Medical Center, High Country Rec Fee Center, Prescott Chamber of Commerce, Northern Arizona Vein Center. Now, here's your host for Q&A, DJ Phone.
And welcome to the Monday edition of Q&A. Anything new going on the last few days? My goodness gracious. This is like living in a science fiction movie. I've never seen or read anything like this. If you had taken today's and the last few days' news headlines and stories and put it in book or movie form, nobody would buy it because they wouldn't believe it. This is really amazing. This is a hopefully once-in-a-lifetime thing we're all going through. But if we all pull through and quit buying up all the toilet paper, we should be okay. You know, when I saw all those shelves cleared of toilet paper, I thought, does coronavirus cause diarrhea? Why are people doing this? And why are they clearing the store shelves of bottled and jugs, gallon jugs of water? Is coronavirus going to make all the water taps run dry? You know, a little common sense goes a long way. I know from my hometown of St. Louis, when we got a nasty, nasty blizzard back in 82, all of a sudden, whenever the local TV newscasters would say, are we going to get snow tonight? We'll have the story at 10 o'clock. Everybody hit the grocery stores and cleared the place out of milk, eggs, and bread. So I guess they figured out they live on French toast for a week. But the way these panic buying flurries are going on, it's just crazy. Well, we have a show today that's going to reflect that. We're going to talk first with a conservative economist, Sean Flanagan. He has co-written a wonderful report. It's the United States Prosperity Index, and he goes state by state to look at what is going on economically now and the foreseeable future, even with all this coronavirus scare going on. And then after we talk to Sean Flanagan, I will play back my interview. Since we've all got our health on the front of the mind, we'll do my interview with Dr. Rupi Alja for his book, Eat to Beat Illness. And then we'll close the show today with a book that was written last July. But boy, is it pertinent now. It's written by economist James Rickards. The interview was conducted by my colleague Gregory Scott, and it was aired during my absence last summer. It's called Aftermath, Seven Secrets of Wealth Preservation in the Coming Chaos. And I'll guarantee you he didn't see this kind of coming chaos. But it is still interesting how people will go to sometimes extreme lengths to protect their money when they see chaos all around them. So a good interview coming up, thanks to Gregory Scott, with James Rickard. Among the events canceled locally in the wake of the coronavirus and official government declarations, you may have heard on the news today, Governor Ducey and Superintendent of Schools Kathy Hoffman have announced all schools, all of them, and pre-care or daycare centers closed for the next 2 weeks until further notice. Also at the Finley Toyota Center, Cirque du Soleil Axel was going to be held this weekend for four shows. That has been called off. Also next weekend's Crossroads of the West Gun Show, that has also been postponed, called off until further notice. We are still waiting for word on the World Fighting Federation coming up April 4th, the Yavapai Bottle Gas Mile High PBR coming up in late April, and we, of course, will let you know about that. Well, Sean Flanagan has co-written the U.S. Prosperity Index, and you know what? If I didn't know better, I'd see that phone blinking. I'd swear it was Sean Flanagan. How you doing, Sean?
Hi, very well, thanks. Is that DJ Phone?
That's correct. Thank you for calling in at the exact right time. I would imagine having written the U.S. Prosperity Index a few months ago, you might be looking at current trends and thinking, what the heck is going on, huh?
It is interesting times. You're absolutely that's better. Definitely.
Ah, there we go. Okay. And I think we're back online here. So when you wrote the USA Prosperity Index, or co-wrote it, I should say, what was your original goal with this report?
So we at the Lagarten Institute have been...
Are you there? Oh, I'm sorry. Hold on. Let's try that. Okay, are you still there?
Yep, still here.
Okay.
Yep. I've got a bit of an echo coming back on, though.
Okay, let me turn the speaker down here. That may help a little bit. Okay, let's try that.
So, Le Garton Institute exists to help create the pathways from poverty to prosperity.
Mm-hmm.
But when we talk about prosperity, we're looking at it very much from a social well-being. So
mm-hmm.
both of those working hand in hand, which we believe leads to a life truly flourishing. And we've been measuring and tracking that globally over the past 13 years using our Global Prosperity Index. And then we notice something quite interesting when we look at the USA, particularly, obviously, the economic aspect of the index. The U.S. performs particularly on the open economies domain. It ranks fourth out of 167 nations. So,
mm-hmm.
But when you look at the other two domains of prosperity that we have in the index, the one is inclusive societies, and that looks at the extent of safety and security, governance, personal freedom, and social capital, and also the empowered people domain. So that's the sort of lived experience of people on a day-to-day basis. So things around their living conditions, their natural environment, but also education and health. We see that the U.S. goes from fourth on open economies, and its overall prosperity ends up ranking 18th globally. So we were really interested in wanting to understand why that was, and were commissioned to do the United States Prosperity Index and measure the extent of prosperity across the 50 states and D.C.
What were some of the surprises you gained about different areas in this country regarding their prosperity index?
Well, we found that there's some macro messages coming through, and some of these were not necessarily a surprise, but perhaps reinforcing what was already known. So, what I should say, DJ Phone, is that we'd seen over the past decade that prosperity in the U.S. had continued to rise, and actually in the latest year was at its highest ever level. And there were a number of reasons for that. One is the strength in an economy, but also things like improved education and health and living conditions, which had recovered post the recession and were now way above what they were before. But we found within some of those things, though, a bit of a mixed message. So health, for example, whilst health overall had gone up, we found that actually mental health over the past decade had seen a decline, and obviously perhaps no surprise with the sort of, the drug overdose deaths and increased suicide, etc. So that wasn't a surprise, but was reinforcing. One of the things that we did find, which perhaps isn't quite so well known, is the decline in social capital. And social capital is almost like the glue of society. It's the extent of strength of relationships between family members, friends, but also trust in strangers, trust in institutions and the government, and also the extent to which people engage and interact in society, so participation in clubs, religious organizations. When we added all those things together in social capital, we've seen that had declined over the past decade, and that's also something we see in the UK as well. It's the cohesiveness of society is perhaps not as strong as it once was. But then when we look at the individual states, one of the really interesting messages that we found is when we look at the global index, you find that generally those countries at the top, particularly the sort of Nordic countries, Scandinavian, perhaps Northern Europe, and they generally perform well on pretty much all the different aspects of prosperity. And those at the bottom of the index generally perform, poorly. But when we looked at the U.S., we found that actually there was no single state that was performing well across all the different aspects of prosperity. Mm. So real opportunities for each state to improve, but also to learn from each other. So where there was a state that was doing one thing particularly well, where could that benefit another state that was perhaps not performing quite so strongly? So that was one of the key messages, which we found particularly interesting.
One of the benchmarks of your book is your statement that American prosperity depends on states being laboratories of democracy. Explain that, please.
Yeah, so that's sort of building upon the point that I was just making around that opportunity to sort of implement strategies or approaches at a state level, which can then benefit the whole of society as well, the wider sort of population. But also they can look at another state and say, okay, what is it that they're doing well? Or how are they doing this particular aspect well? Could we look to implement something similar where we are to try and to sort of learn and benefit from each other. So each state having that sort of opportunity to be a laboratory of experimentation.
Mm-hmm. And you use some examples such as Connecticut, which is ranked second for prosperity overall, but 29th for economic quality. That goes back to the different pillars you use to measure these qualities, correct?
Yes, yeah. So the index is it's almost like a pyramid, mm-hmm. DJ Phone. If you imagine at the very top of the pyramid, you've got what is the overall prosperity level. Underneath that, you've got those three domains that I talked about, open economies, inclusive societies, and empowered people. Underneath that level, you've got 11 pillars of prosperity. So they're the economic quality and open economies through to in inclusive societies where you've got personal freedom and governance. And then in the empowered people, you've got things like health and education. Underneath that, you've then got these 48, what we call policy-focused elements. So these we constructed very much in the intention of the user in mind. So it could be state governors, state legislators, policy practitioners who want to deliver change. We've tried to construct these policy-focused elements, 48 of them. So a good example is, say, is education. So education is one of our pillars. But if you were to say, you know, one state's doing better on another on education overall, the next question is, well, what particular aspect of education? Mm-hmm. Is it primary or is it high school or is it tertiary and universities? So we've constructed these policy elements to really answer those questions. And then underneath the 48 elements, the way that we're measuring is using these 203 indicators, which are all publicly available data sets that we've used. So from the, like the Census Bureau, you know, other state sources that we've pulled together. And we've done this actually drawing upon the advice of about 35, 40 U.S. experts. So we didn't beaver away in London in our offices there. We actually draw upon experts within the U.S., experts on health, education, to really help us shape this index so that it was as good as it could be.
Now, you and Stephen write about the success of the individual still feeds into the success of the nation as a whole and vice versa. Explain the elements of that, what you call a virtuous circle.
Yeah, so I think this sense around, if for example, if you take education, I think if, you know, when we look at the index, we try and not look at it through a linear perspective. We don't believe that actually prosperity works in that way, but there are some things that will then play into other things. So if, for example, education is an area of that needs or is an area that's not so strong as it could be. Mm-hmm. By investing in that area, what that then does is it creates a more educated population, which then leads to higher levels of potential employment, mm-hmm. which can then attract different sort of types of industries and services. So these aspects of the index often play across one another or interplay with each other. And so that's why we talk about this sort of circle. By investing in one particular area, you can then see and reap benefits from other. And it kind of plays back in how the individual then benefits society and vice versa.
You mentioned before declining social capital. How much of that can you blame on our reliance on smartphones and computerization and not talking face-to-face?
That is a very good question, and I think it's a challenging, because you know one of the things we talk about in the index is the importance of communication, and we use the aspect of communication, i.e., the ability to have access to the internet, high speed internet, rural urban internet access. They are very, very important things from both an industry perspective, but also from a personal perspective. So we capture that in both the economic quality of the open economies, but also in the connectedness of living conditions. Mm-hmm. So we absolutely recognize that ability for, to be able to connect and communicate with each other in a digital world and a digital age. So we're not saying that those things aren't important, but what we do see is that that those interactions between each other and those interactions with neighbors, mm-hmm. particularly in the U.S., I think I can't remember the exact stat, but I think in the U.S. we see that those regular interactions with neighbors has fallen from about 71% in 2009. I think it now stands at about 55%. So that's quite a big decrease in the extent to which people are communicating and making sure that those relationships are strong, which we believe are an important part of society.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the institute that you and your co-author Stephen are directors of.
Yeah, so we both work for the Legatum Institute, which is a global think tank. We're based in London, but we have, as I say, we have a global remit, and our mission is around creating pathways from poverty to prosperity, and we do that in a number of different ways. One of which is through our global index, and the global index and the US index are, we hope and believe, are policy tools that practitioners can take and use to see across the whole aspect of governing well, to see where a nation or where a state is strong and where it's weak, and then what the policy response might be. So this is a data tool to help drive decision making. But we also do other programs of work. We look at refugees and trafficking. We've got a program of work that looks at how do nations succeed. So what we're doing there is we're looking at fairly long period of history, and we're looking at a number of nations that have made that transition from perhaps being in poverty and have moved into being a more successful nation. And what was it? What were the things that they did along the way so that we can then almost create a bank of policy ideas that when we work with countries, we can help perhaps on that transition from poverty to prosperity.
And, Sean, here in Northern Arizona, we get an awful lot of people moving here from Southern California and California as a whole. They move here largely to retire, but also to get away from what they complain about as high taxation, ridiculously high cost of living. But your United States Prosperity Index mentions that California is an example of a state that has actually improved its economic quality over the last decade. True?
Yes.
What kinds of factors do you think went into that?
So the economic quality, I'm just pulling it up now just to make sure.
Uh-huh.
So one of the things, we break that down into the four policy focus elements. So the economic quality pillar is broken down into four things. It's broken down into something that we call fiscal sustainability. So that that's really looking at the extent to which the state finance itself if it finds itself in a bit of a crisis. So, for example, how much state reserves has it got? How long could it last? What's its budget balance and its state pension funding? That's the fiscal sustainability. We then look at things like productivity and competitiveness. So that's how much does it export in terms of value, both manufactured and non-manufactured. It also looks at how productive is the labor market within a state. We look at dynamism. That is the extent to which the state is able to generate new business. So startups, rate of new entrepreneurs, and how have they got a good survival rate? How much, you know, the extent of jobs that they create. And then the final thing is around labor force engagement. So here we're looking at things like levels of unemployment, how many people are actively engaged in the workforce, both youth and overall. Underemployment is something else we capture. And finally, the labor force participation. So how much of the labor force are actually, or how much of the population of those of working age are engaged in the workforce?
And Sean, since you and Stephen Bryan have worked so hard on putting together the United States Prosperity Index, is this a report primarily aimed at government and universities and economists, or can our listeners get a copy of it?
Oh, absolutely. That's forgive me. I've been remiss not to say. So all of the work that we've done is publicly available. So if you go to www.usprosperity.net, what we've got there is, as well as full detail on the methodology, the report itself, which we published last year, but there is also, via an interactive map, as soon as you go onto the website, there is a state profile for every single state and DC, which provides the high-level information of how prosperous is the state and how that's changed over the past decade. And then you can drill down into all those different layers that I talked about, from the domains to the pillars to the policy focus elements, all the way down to the individual indicators. So it's full transparency. And I think, absolutely, we see this as a tool that policymakers and state legislators can use. But it's also a tool I think, in this very important year that people could use to say, well, how well has my state done?
Mm-hmm.
Those in power. It's a good accountability tool as well.
And I'm glad you said, how well has my state done? Because this pretty much is an indicator of the wellness of the country and state, isn't it?
Yes, it's the collective wellness, mm-hmm. both economically and socially.
And Sean Flanagan, we thank you so much for joining us today on Q&A. Continued success in your research and your publishing.
Thanks very much, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Bye-bye. And that is Sean Flanagan, co-author with Stephen Bryan there with the Legatum Institute. That is the United States Prosperity Index. A lot of really fascinating information there. Hey, we've got two authors coming up in just a moment you won't want to miss. Plus, we'll have a look at local and state news and weather coming your way on today's Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, 1130 a.m., 99.9 FM, 95.5 FM in Prescott Valley and Cottonwood. We stream live at KQNA.com.
Load up the RV and hit the open road. To the repair shop? Now that's not my idea of a fun trip, and it sure isn't convenient. So let High Country Rugby Center come to you. Mobile service is just one of their specialties. They'll even troubleshoot for you over the phone, so you're not paying for unnecessary parts and repairs. And they're an authorized warranty and service center for all the major RV appliance manufacturers and extended warranty work. So to schedule service or just ask them a question, call them at 772-8231 or online at hicountryrvcenter.com.
KQ&A's Cinemated Movie Review is up next, brought to you by Raptor 11.
We all know there's so much going on in our world today, so it's important to plan, educate, and inspire people to action. At Raptor 11, we would like to personally invite you to host your events right here in the heart of Yavapai County. So call me, Dawn, at 928-227-2050, and we will personalize a plan, a menu, an incredible event just for you.
I'm DJ Phone with your KQ&A's in a minute. Now showing at the Harkins 14 in Prescott Valley, The Invisible Man, a spooky psychological thriller with hints of the sixth sense of Hitchcock's Gaslight, Suspicion and Notorious, and Julia Roberts in Sleeping with the Enemy, as San Francisco architect Elizabeth Moss leaves her wealthy, abusive, control freak boyfriend, a mad scientist inventor, with Moss escaping him physically, if not mentally. Later learning he's been reported dead by suicide, leaving her a fortune with conditions. That makes her even more paranoid and terrified.
Now you see me, now you don't.
Here, the fear and suspense is in what you don't see. 4 surveillance cameras out of 5 for The Invisible Man. That's your KQ&A's in a minute for the Harkins 14 in Prescott Valley. I'm DJ Phone.
KQ&A's Cinnamon and Movie Review has been brought to you by Raptor 11.
Hi, everyone. This is Dennis Prager inviting you to join me every weekday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. right here on KQNA.
I'm proud to be part of KQNA's live talk block every day.
No pulling of punches, because we tell it like it is. And if you like to think, well, you'll love my show. And if you don't like to think, well, by golly, you need my show. The Dennis Prager Show, weekdays from 10 to 1 on the Talk of the Quad Cities, KQNA.
You're listening to Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, KQ&A. Once again, here's your host, DJ Phone.
Hey, that review you heard for The Invisible Man, I strongly recommend it. If you like spooky films that have learned that the real terror is sometimes in what you don't see. Speaking of spooky movies, with the box office success 2 years ago of Get Out, last year's Us and A Quiet Place, and this year's hit, of course, The Invisible Man, and A Quiet Place 2 opening, by the way, sometime in the next few weeks. Universal Studios is jumping on that horror movie bandwagon. They're putting together a modern remake of Dracula. And movies should be playing sometime later this year. So if you like spooky movies, that's probably pretty good news. You know, movie theaters, nightclubs, and concert venues have been ordered closed by the authorities in New York and California. I'm keeping a close eye on what happens here. I don't know what Harkins is going to do yet, but they have not yet posted any new movies for opening this Friday. That may be an indicator of what's to come. Stay tuned now for a check of local and state news and weather, followed by two really good author interviews that are pertinent to today's headlines. Coming up on today's Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, 1130 AM, 99.9 FM, 95.5 FM in Prescott Valley and Cottonwood, streaming live at KQNA.com.
We're told that staying in the moment is one path to a happy life. The Breast Care Center at Yavapai Regional Medical Center is here to help you on that journey. Rest assured that when it comes to your breast health, YRMC's Breast Care Center sets the standard of excellence in our community. What does that mean to you? It means state-of-the-art screening technology, exceptional and experienced providers, a compassionate and supportive team. And if you need it, YRMC's Breast Care Center is ready with the most advanced diagnostic studies and customized treatment options. Staying in the moment. Inspired by you.
Do not paint your own house. If you paint your house, you will spill the paint. If you spill the paint, you will have to replace your floor. To replace your floor, you will pay the floor man enough money to go to Hawaii. Don't pay your floor man to go to Hawaii. Call Century Painting. We will paint your house, not spill the paint, save you money, and send you to Hawaii. So call Century Painting, 778-2374, or go to centurypainting.com.
Listening to Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, KQNA. Once again, here's your host, DJ Phone.
Welcome back to Q&A. Well, imagine a world in which common conditions such as heart disease, type 2 diabetes, and dementia are rare. And imagine feeling great all the time with a sharp mind, healthy weight, stellar vision and hearing, strong bone and flexible joints, radiant hair and skin. Does it sound too good to be true? Well, it's not. Dr. Rupi Ojala is a medical doctor specialized in general practice. He's a firm believer in the power of food and lifestyle change to heal and prevent illness, and he wants to make healthy lifestyles enjoyable and deliciously accessible. He's the founder of the culinary medicine nonprofit in the UK and is the author of The Doctor's Kitchen and his newest book, Eat to Beat Illness, 80 Simple Delicious Recipes Inspired by the Science of Food as Medicine. Dr. Ojala, your book provides the latest research on how food impacts every system of your body, including your organs and your emotions. Now, how do you choose which foods are better for different parts of the body?
Yeah, well, thank you so much for the introduction. What I decided to do with the book is to break it down into different sections. So eating for your brain, eating for your immunity, eating for skin. But actually, when you zoom out from all those different individual topics, you realize that all the principles of healthy eating are the same. And so when you eat plant-focused, lots of different colors, you add complexity to your food by eating a variety of different ingredients and getting fiber in there and quality fats, you're actually eating for every part of your body because you're giving your body the fuel to that it knows inherently how to look after itself. So that's really the final chapter in one. But, you know, diving into the research and looking into individual chapters was a really fun experience. And I think people are going to learn a lot more about how food is so impactful to health.
Now, your book also explains the connection between nutrition and cancer, heart disease, dementia, and autoimmune conditions, and you reveal the specific ingredients proven to boost prevention and well-being and reverse symptoms. Describe your steps to determine those.
Yeah, so basically by breaking it down into individual chapters, I did a big dive into the literature looking at brain health, for example, or mood health. And what you realize is that there are big studies looking at the associations for types of diets and how that is associated with the incidence of things like cognitive issues or Alzheimer's or even mental health issues. And now there's a lot more appreciation, particularly in the nutritional sciences, about how food can be used as a preventative for a lot of these things. In fact, there's a new term called nutritional psychiatry, which is all about how we can utilize food as an adjunct to our traditional therapies and treating patients as well. So it's quite fascinating what's going on in the nutrition world, and I think the principles of eating are very, very simple. It doesn't have to be overcomplicated. It just needs to be plant-focused, lots of quality fats and colors, and actually enjoying your food as well.
Mm-hmm. As a doctor, what are some of the biggest eating mistakes you see patients and readers doing?
I see a lot of mistakes I see are actually restrictive eating. So you're actually removing certain elements of your diet because you feel like they're unhealthy. Whereas, you know, the only thing I would say remove is junk food and high sugar foods. But actually you want to be introducing a lot more different foods, a lot more different plants. And trying an ingredient a week, I think, is a very good way of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I would say is following fad diets is probably not the way to go because we know that diets tend not to work, and it's actually eating according to a way that is in line with your convenience, your environment, and your ability to stick to this way of eating. It's going to be much more impactful in the long run.
Some of your recipes in the book, and you have 80 delicious recipes inspired by the science of food as medicine. And some of those recipes include Cajun sweet potato hash, cashew curry, jambalaya, spinach lasagna, and banana fritters with maple cream. Let me ask you, what spices and seasonings should every household have for healthy eating?
Oh, that's a great question. So I'm a really big fan of using spices because they are packed full of micronutrients and phytonutrients. So the more culinary spices, the better. Mm. It doesn't need to be, you know, fancy like turmeric or curcumin. It can be simple things like basil, rosemary, lavender. All these culinary herbs are just as impressive when you look at their phytochemical benefits. The three things I would say that every household should probably have: cinnamon, fantastic ingredient in its whole form or in ground if you like, but whole form is better, and then you can grind it into foods. Cumin seeds, it's a great ingredient, lots of African dishes, lots of Mexican dishes as well, and the seed form is better because you get some of the oils from it too.
Oh, yeah.
And fennel is wonderful. You can use it as a carnitive, helps with digestion, and it's a good ingredient to use in different sorts of dishes. So we have Louisiana dishes use it quite a bit, and you can just put it in hot water as well and just have it as a drink.
Wow. Now, the recipes in your book, they take our readers around the globe. What were your inspirations?
The inspiration I have for taking people around the globe using food is because, A, I believe healthy eating should be accessible to everyone, and it's not about one cuisine being healthier than another. It can be reflective of everyone's background. And the other thing, like, I'm a family physician in London, and I'm privileged to see people from all different sorts of backgrounds,
mm-hmm.
whether it be Korean, Japanese, Middle Eastern, Indian, you name it, I see them in the NHS. And I want to make sure that the recipes that everyone has access to is reflective of people's identities, people's cultural heritages, and we can all enjoy recipes from around the globe, and it makes us closer as a community.
How do you feel about the latest studies on red meat?
Yeah, so I think that particular study that you're referring to has hit the headlines in quite a negative way. I think there's mountains of research to determine that it's not just about red meat. It's about the quality and the quantity of red meat that you have. So certainly having red meat every single day or even every other day is not going to be good for your health, and the WHO made that very, very clear. So it's about the quality as well as the quantity of your meat. So I treat animal products as luxury items because they are luxury items. If you think about our hunter-gatherer days, there's no way you'd just be popping down to your supermarket and picking up your butchered meat. It'd be something that came around fairly rarely, and you'd have lots of plants in abundance.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's how we should probably mimic eating.
What are the best types of fish for healthy eating?
I think the smaller the better. So the smaller oily fish are going to be a lot more concentrated in the omega-3 fats that we know are good for skin health, eye health, brain health as well. So mackerel, sardines, anchovies, awesome, awesome foods. And they're good flavoring agents as well. So I pop sardines, anchovies in just a couple of fillets into a stew. You won't taste the fish, but it gives it a je ne sais quoi, a different sort of flavor that no one could really put their finger on, but it's a good little trick.
And for those of us heading for the salad bar for lunch, are all vegetables created equal?
I would say the complexity of vegetables is what you're going to be looking for. So it's not about just getting beets or artichokes or single ingredients like kale. It's about getting as many different varieties as possible. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking at a salad that's full of five different options rather than just one full of beets, for example, it's the one with five different types that wins.
And the name of the book is Eat to Beat Illness, 80 Simple Delicious Recipes Inspired by the Science of Food as Medicine by Dr. Rupi Aujla. How can our listeners learn more about your writings and get a copy of the book?
Oh, absolutely. So you can find me at thedoctorskitchen.com. I have a podcast, and I'm across social media at doctors_kitchen. I think the podcast is a great way of interacting with the kind of stuff that I talk about. You can find the book in Amazon, IndieBound, and in stores at Barnes & Noble everywhere. So, yeah, go pick up a copy.
And we thank you for joining us today on Q&A. Continued success in your practice and your publishing.
Thank you very much.
You know you love your baby, so treat her right. Get your car gleaming inside and out with a Prescott Pro Wash Detail. They're the mobile detail specialists who will come to your home or business with options to fit your schedule and budget. From an express wash to a full detail and everything in between, they even have a ceramic coating that is weather resistant and will protect your baby like nothing else. And one application can last up to 3 years. That's 3 years you don't have to wax your car. So give Eric a call and drive around in style at 848-3799 or online at PrescottProWash.com.
Hi, James Roush here of Wallach & Volk Mortgage. Are you interested in buying a home and just have a million questions running through your head? The James Roush team at Wallach & Volk Mortgage is here 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by appointment. Even if you need to meet on Saturday morning because of your work schedule, we'll be there. Call the James Roush team at 445-8730, Wallach & Volk Mortgage.
License number 00128295, LNS number 16209, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Hi, I'm Bryn Stotler with the City of Prescott. The census is just around the corner, so make sure you're counted. You can respond by phone, mail, or online. The Prescott Public Library will offer online assistance in the library's training lab on the third floor. Starting in mid-March, Mondays from 10 a.m. to noon, and Wednesdays from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. On April 1st from 10 a.m. to 12 noon, there will be a census open house. For more information, go to prescott-az.gov/2020census. Remember, our goal is counting everyone once, only once, and in the right place.
Thank you for calling Patriot Disposal. This is Jim. How may I help you?
Jim, I don't use your service. I have another company, and I just got my trash bill today, and oh, I'm so hopping mad. Do you charge a monthly regulatory fee?
No.
Administrative?
No.
Environmental?
No. In fact, with our own SmartStream Recycle technology, our recycle service at Patriot Disposal is free.
Free recycling? No monthly fees? Okay, Jim, sign me up with Patriot Disposal.
Patriot Disposal, 775-9000 or 203-9995.
Amazing food, romantic music, and candles. Everything you need for a midweek date night. Every Wednesday, Carmela's offers super salads, entrees, dessert, and a bottle of wine for two for only $45 per couple. Choose from chicken parmesan, fettuccine alfredo, fruit tamires, eggplant tower, linguine primavera, or a special chef's creation. Carmela's offers live music and a rose for each couple. Reserve your table now for every Wednesday from 5 to 8 p.m.
We're KQ&A.
Thanks for making the Talk of the Quad Cities KQ&A your choice for your Monday the 16th. I'm DJ Phone with a check of local and state news and weather together. Brought to you by Wallach & Volk.
A major hospital chain is changing visitor policies amid the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic.
Banner Health says starting today, it's limiting hospital access points. Visitors will get their temperature taken before they enter the hospital, and it's one visitor per patient. Banner Health says it has no shortage of masks and other equipment medical personnel need, and no bed shortages anticipated for the time being. At Banner Health in Phoenix, Barbara Villa, Arizona News Radio.
In addition to the cancellation of this weekend's scheduled Cirque du Soleil Axel show at the Findlay Toyota Center, also being canceled next weekend's Crossroads of the West gun shows. Mostly sunny and breezy today with showers and snow moving in Tuesday night through Thursday. Warming today to about 59 in Prescott, Prescott Valley, Chino Valley, and Dewey-Humboldt. Tuesday, 54, with big chill Wednesday and Thursday highs only around 41, with 2 to 4 inches of snow Wednesday night and Thursday. Chilling after bedtime tonight to a partly cloudy 37. In Cottonwood and the Verde Valley, a late night low, a mostly cloudy 43, up to a breezy, mostly sunny 68 today, 64 tomorrow. Rainy Wednesday and Thursday, highs around 50. Sunshine returns this weekend. This news and weather, a service of Wallach and Volk. I'm DJ Phone on the Talk of the Quad Cities. 1130 AM, 99.9 and 95.5 FM, KQNA. Like us on Facebook and listen live worldwide at KQNA.com and stay tuned. Q&A will continue in just a moment on KQNA.
Listening to Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, KQNA. Once again, here's your host, DJ Phone.
And a very good afternoon to you. Gregory Scott sitting in here for DJ Phone. And we are going to talk today with author James Rickards, New York Times bestselling author of Death of Money and Currency Wars, editor of the newsletter Strategic Intelligence, and a member of the Board of Advisors of the Center of Economic and Financial Power, and author of numerous books. And Mr. Rickards has the unique ability of being right when it comes to financial matters. James Rickards, welcome to Q&A.
Thank you, Gregory. Great to be with you.
And you have a brand new book out that just came out last week entitled Aftermath, Seven Secrets of Wealth Preservation in the Coming Chaos. Give us a synopsis of your new book.
Well, I'd be glad to. Thank you. Thanks, Gregory. A couple things. People ask about the title, Aftermath, and they say, well, the aftermath of what?
Yes.
And that has two answers, and one is we are still in the aftermath of the 2008-2009 financial crisis. Now, I understand we've had 10 years of expansion starting in June 2009. Now, in the 11th year, it's the longest expansion in U.S. history. Unemployment is 3.6%. Interest rates are low. And people say, well, you know, what are you talking about? The stock market's at an all-time high. Everything looks great. How could we be in the aftermath of that crisis? And the answer is there's a lot less there than meets the eye, and let me be specific. For example, in the first quarter of 2019, first quarter of this year, growth was 3.1%, which is very good. That's good growth. And, you know, the White House and Larry Kudlow were running around saying, see, we told you, you know, cut taxes, cut regulation, we'll get growth back up to 3-4%, it's all good. Well, that was the first quarter. The second quarter is now over. We won't have the official data for a couple more days. But the best estimate prepared by the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta is that growth in the second quarter was 1.6%. That's a steep drop-off, and if you average the two quarters, you get to around 2.3%, which, guess what, is exactly where it's been for the last 10 years. So it's not, you know, it's not the end of the world. It's not a depression or recession, but it's not strong growth either. And, in fact, during the Obama administration, there were certain quarters where it was over 4%, and one time when it was 4%, 3% approximately back-to-back. So Obama had those growth spurts, but every time it, it fell right off a cliff and went back down to 1% or so. In one case, it was actually negative. In other words, what that means is that you have these strong quarters, but they're quirky. You know, it's volatile. It could be inventory accumulation, could be trade deficit, et cetera. But it's not sustainable. We are not getting sustainable long-term growth of 3 to 4%, which is what we need to deal with the debt crisis. So the Trump administration, it's not horrible, it's not great either. It's turning out pretty much exactly the same as the Obama administration, number one. Number two, 3.6% unemployment. Well, sounds good, but there are 10 million able-bodied adults between the ages of 25 and 54, the prime working years, who are not in the labor force.
Right.
Now, they don't count as unemployed because they're not looking for a job, but they're there. They're real people. They could be working. Some of them, not all of them. You got homemakers and, you know, students and others. But I'm not talking about people with disabilities or retirement age. These are prime age workers. If you add them in, which I think you should, at least to understand this, the unemployment rate's actually closer to 8% or in some measures even 10%. Productivity's low. Growth is slow. The unemployment is not as rosy as it looks. Real wages are not going up. Again, is this the end of the world? No. But it is really weak growth, and it's continuing. The United States looks a lot like Japan, which has had, you know, you talk about the lost decade in the 90s. Well, they've had three lost decades through 2019. It's been 30 years of very slow growth, periodic recession, and deflation. The U.S. has just finished its first lost decade. And to be specific about that, since 1980, the average expansion has produced growth of 3.2%. Since 2009, we've produced growth of 2.2%. And people say, well, what's the big deal? It's only a percentage. Doesn't seem like that much. At least the economy is growing. It's a very big deal. And the reason is that you take 1% and apply it to a $20 trillion economy and compound it over 10 years,
yeah,
you're talking about lost wealth of $5 trillion. In other words, that's how much more we could have made. That's how much richer the U.S. economy could be if we had grown at the old rate instead of the new rate. Imagine someone going into the Oval Office, handing the president a check for $5 trillion and saying, here, Mr. President, spend it on whatever you want, you know, defense, infrastructure, benefits, entitlements, whatever. Well, that's how much money we've left on the table. So the economy is not nearly as strong, certainly not as productive. Wages are not growing as much as the cheerleaders would have you believe. And that's the good news. I mean, that's just kind of where we are.
Right.
But behind it all is a monster, which is the debt of $23 trillion going higher all the time. And that is actually to the point where the debt itself is slowing the growth. I mean, people say, is debt a problem or not? Well, you have to put it in the context of how much income do you have to support it. You know, if you had somebody had $25,000 of, you know, MasterCard debt, is that a problem? Well, if you're making $20,000 a year, it's a big problem.
It's a problem.
Probably going bankrupt.
Yes.
But if you're making $200,000 a year, it's not. So you have to compare it to the deficit, the GDP, but it's 106%, the highest since World War II, and it's slowing growth.
We're talking with author James Rickards here today with his new book out, Seven Secrets of Wealth Preservation in the Coming Chaos. You've described the state of our economy right now. Of course, your book directed at people who have investments and how to protect those. What do you recommend?
Well, a couple things. Number one, you know, you need diversification. That sounds obvious. I mean, that's kind of portfolio management,
right,
101, but people say, well, I'm diversified. I've got 50 different stocks in 8 different sectors. And I say, no, you're not. You're not diversified because you have one asset class. You may have 50 stocks, but you're all in the stock market. I don't know how you could sleep at night. You know, in 2000, after the dot-com crash, the NASDAQ went down 80%. 2008, the major stock markets went down over 50%. So that's the risk you take, even with a bunch of different stocks. So real diversification means things that are not linked to the stock market. So that would include, as inflation protection, you'd have gold, silver, land, maybe some stocks in natural resources, oil and water. As your deflation protection, has some treasury notes because they perform very well in deflation. In fact, I just left a monetary conference in Bretton Woods, New Hampshire. Larry Summers was there, and the consensus was that interest rates are going to come down, which they are. So bonds are going to do, and notes are going to do really well. And then have a slug of cash because it reduces volatility. And also, if things fall apart, as I expect they will, the person with cash can sit back, take a deep breath, and go shopping for bargains. And by the way, Warren Buffett has $115 billion of cash on the books of Berkshire Hathaway. He sees what I see, and he's ready for the next crisis. And cash is a good way to not only get through it, but, as I say, you can pick up some bargains on the other side.
And, of course, many years investing was just riding the roller coaster. You know, you invest your money, you know the markets are going to go up, you know the markets are going down, and you just kind of let it roll. But being passive in your investments is not the way to go in today's economy, correct?
Well, that's right. And that's one of the things I talk about. I have a whole chapter on this. And passive index investing, you know, the Vanguard fund and ETFs, exchange traded funds and all that, which is just a mini index. This stuff started in the 70s. It really exploded in the 90s and the early 2000s. And the theory is, you know, you can't beat the market. You know, it doesn't matter how smart you are, or how hard you work. You can't beat the market. So don't even try. Just get into an index fund. We'll duplicate the market. You're along for the ride. It could go up or down, but in the long run, it goes up. The fees are lower. What's not to like? Just do it. Well, the answer is everybody is doing it, and the amount of assets in passive index funds is now the majority and growing faster all the time of the total assets in the stock market. Meanwhile, over here is the so-called active investor. The person does his homework, her homework, works with fundamentals, picks stocks, commits capital, and takes risk. Now, here's the point, and I'll use a metaphor, but I think it's a good one. So a mosquito lands on the back of an elephant. What happens? Well, the mosquito gets a good meal, and the elephant doesn't even notice. But if a million mosquitoes land on the back of the elephant dies. And that's passive investing. Passive investors are hitching a ride,
right,
getting a free ride on the capital commitments of active investors. But what happens when the active investor disappears, in my case, when the elephant dies? Well, so now, yeah, it can go on for a while, but when you have a downturn and a sharp correction, and we had one as recently as fourth quarter 2018, the market went down 11%. Well, the passive guys, they have to sell because their investors are calling up saying, you know, get me out, sell the stocks, get me cash, et cetera. So they're selling into a declining market. The market goes down faster. Where's the active investor? Where's the capital committer who stands up and says, you know what, you want to be a seller, I'll be a buyer. If you take that person out of the equation, the market goes no bid. It goes straight down. Now there are no active investors around to take the other side of the trade. And that sets you up for a much larger catastrophe than we've seen in the past. Something more like 1929, where, you know, over the course of the Great Depression, the market went down 80%. So if you're all in stocks, I know markets are at all-time highs, but I don't know how you can sleep at night because you're set up for a massive fall. And again, the answer is real diversification, where you have some stocks, that's fine, but you have some gold, silver, land, our treasury notes and cash that'll get you through a crisis.
Well, we've only got another minute or so, but quickly, you talk about elephants. Talk to us quickly about China. What role are they going to play in the future of the world economy?
Well, you know, one of the questions I get most frequently is, you know, Jim, I read your books, I heard your presentation, heard you on the radio, whatever, I get it, I agree with you, but could you call me like 3 o'clock the day before it happens, and I'll sell my stocks and buy some gold? And I tell them, look, I can tell you what's going to happen, I can tell you it's coming, but I'm not going to know the day, or maybe if I did, I'd be a little busy that day. The point is, why wait for that? When the crisis hits, you're not going to be able to do anything. You're going to call your dealer for gold, and they're not going to return your call. So the time to prepare for that is now, you know, along the lines I've described. We're not helpless. Maybe you can't change the world, but you can protect, you know, your wealth and take care of your family with the kind of, you know, things I've suggested. And I would put treasury notes and gold and silver and land at the top of the list.
Well, James Rickards, author of Aftermath, Seven Secrets of Wealth Preservation in the Coming Chaos, and that book out now. And you can get Mr. Rickards' book and get yourself up to date. We only had like 10 minutes here, but we could probably talk for 10 hours. So, Mr. Rickards, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us here on KQ&A this afternoon. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Gregory.
Whether it's in sale or service, find a better buying experience and the highest expressions of luxury at Finley Buick Prescott. And get it with up to 32% off MSRP on a new 2019 Buick Encore. With savings over $8,000, your Finley price is a low $17,628. Buick is recognized by Kelley Blue Book as the best value luxury brand. Value like 28% off a new 2019 Envision. With savings over $9,900, your Finley price is only $24,971. We guarantee
to better any Arizona Buick dealer's price by $500 on the same make, model, equipment, and year. We can do that with savings of up to 20% off new 2019 Buick Enclave. That's over $9,600. Finley Buick in Prescott and at FinleyBuickGMC.com. The local dealership that supports your community. Buick. Experience worry-free luxury.
Unapproved credit must finance through GM Financial plus tax, title, license, and 495 doc fees. Stock numbers are B412701, B43556, B42103.
The Baleri Professional Building, home to Prescott's premier high-tech business suites, located right in the heart of downtown Prescott. Baleri Business Suites feature high-speed internet, covered parking, and a climate-controlled environment designed for business, medical, legal, and most any general office purpose. New one-year leases available with one additional month free. Call 445-7191 or go to BaleriProfessionalBuilding.com for more information. The Baleri Professional Building, Prescott's business address.
You're listening to Q&A on the Talk of the Quad Cities, KQ&A. Once again, here's your host, DJ Phone.
Well, if you like Jimmy Fallon, Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Kimmel, Seth Meyers, Trevor Noah, Samantha Bee, John Oliver, Andy Cohen, starting today, they're all playing to empty houses as they will still televise their late night shows, but with no studio audience. Just like the debate last night between Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, who refrained from playing to the peanut gallery for cheap applause because there was no one to applaud. And I don't think that's a bad thing. Save the studio audiences for game shows and rallies. Hey, stay tuned now for Ben Shapiro at 3 o'clock, followed at 4 by our friends in Chino Valley for Talk of the Town. Then join me back here Tuesday. I'm going to talk to Damian Browning with Steps to Recovery Homes in Cottonwood. They are staging their annual Dinner for Hope to spread the good word about recovery and as a fundraiser to pay for their bills as they help so many people make that big transition into recovery. That's Q&A coming your way Tuesday at 2 when I will see you on the radio.
You've been listening to Q&A on KQ&A. Today's show was sponsored by High Country Rec V-Center, the Prescott Chamber of Commerce, Yavapai Regional Medical Center, and Prescott College. The views expressed on today's show do not necessarily reflect the views of KQ&A, Prescott Valley Broadcasting, our employees, or our advertisers. Join us next time for Q&A with DJ Phone on the Talk of the Quad Cities, 1130 AM, 99.9 FM in Prescott, and at 95.5 FM in Prescott Valley and Cottonwood, KQ&A.